Welcome to UFO and the Paranormal. And tonight, I am going to be your host. My name is Christine Kisara Dennett, and I have the wonderful pleasure of hosting my most favorite person in the world, Preston Dennett. And I'm going to make it kind of a little game right now. I'm going to have you guess what we're going to talk about. Okay, so let me find my little lead in here. It's the intro to the book, and it says here, taller than a human, smellier than a skunk, and stronger than a bear. It stands about 7 to 12 feet tall, has a small pointed head, no neck, broad chest, powerful arms. It's very hairy, usually brown, but sometimes black. Some people have seen it red and even white. Can you guess what we're going to be talking about? I'll give you 5 seconds. No? You can't guess? Well, Preston Dennett, who wrote a book about this, The Answer, and it's for Chelsea House Publishing. It's an educational book, and it's a wonderful, wonderful book for younger people and older people, too, like me. And Preston, do you know the answer to my hint?
Of course I do. I know it very well. Bigfoot.
And apparently Bigfoot has many different names, but we'll get into that later. I was hoping you could tell us all about Bigfoot.
I sure can, and you know what? It's a little embarrassing because I never actually believed in Bigfoot, even after I've been studying UFOs and ghosts and out-of-body experiences, life after death, all this stuff. Started having people telling me about their Bigfoot encounters. And you know, Christy, I avoided interviewing them out of my own prejudice, I guess. I just didn't want to get into Bigfoot. Weird,
huh? That's pretty fascinating.
It was just too much at the time, you know, and I think there's a lot of skepticism out there about Bigfoot. So, and I was skeptical, definitely. But not anymore. I'll tell you, not anymore.
What changed your mind?
Well, you know, what happened was the first person I interviewed, I knew he was sincere. He was a radiologist. His name was Robert Murphy. And he said that he had a Bigfoot encounter outside Los Angeles, you know, not far from L.A., out in Canyon Country, actually, which is pretty isolated. There's the Los Angeles National Forest in this area. And at any rate, he said he had a Bigfoot encounter in his backyard. He didn't see it, but he heard it, and he heard it roar 3 or 4 times, enough times where he was absolutely convinced it wasn't a cougar, it wasn't a bear. There are those animals out there, but he says this was not it. Whatever was making these roaring noises was extremely large. He said it had to have a huge barrel chest. His dogs were going crazy. Turns out dogs hate Bigfoot. This turns up again and again in interviews that I've done. And he said there were footprints also the next day. So that was my first real encounter with someone who had seen Bigfoot. Or I had the Bigfoot encounter.
That kind of changed your mind when you
heard
his story?
It opened the door a little bit. It didn't really change my mind, but then I got another one. And another one after that. And by this time I'm like, okay. Obviously I'm not doing my job correctly as a researcher if I'm prejudiced and throwing these accounts out just because I don't believe them.
Yeah.
So I started asking people the Bigfoot question. And sure enough, there's quite a number of people out there. Probably somebody you know, all you listeners out there, has seen Bigfoot because it's not nearly as uncommon as I thought. I thought it was really rare, but no. Turns out Bigfoot is pretty much in every single state of the United States, except, I believe, Hawaii does not have any Bigfoot accounts, but everywhere else does. And, of course, across the world as well, South America, Europe, Australia, Russia has a lot of them. Canada is thick with Bigfoot. But California is the number one spot in the world to see Bigfoot, specifically Northern California, around the redwoods and the sequoias and the huge trees, where all the huge trees are, is where most of the Bigfoot are apparently hanging out today. But yeah, they're everywhere, everywhere across the
world.
And
which is really fascinating, because you have in your book a list of names from every country that you named off. Africa is Kikomamba. Asia, they call it many different names, Almas and Kungurus and Sumchinguru Gosu. Australia is called the Yahoo or the Yowie.
Yeah, the Yowie.
China,
right.
Yuron. In Finland, they call it the Tree Eater. Japan, which is kind of an island, is Higapon. I thought that was neat. Higapon. And North America, many, many. And they all sound like Indian names. Sasquatch.
A lot of them are some variation of Sasquatch. So Squattle,
uh-huh.
Sasquatch, which means basically, I mean, in a loose translation, wild man or wild man of the woods. And there is,
uh-huh.
like, I think it's like 10,000, I forget what it is, about 10,000 places, 10,000 in the United States named after Bigfoot. That alone, I think, is pretty darn compelling evidence. It's totally circumstantial, of course, but 10,000? Come on.
I know. And just the list of words that you have here from other countries. I mean, Bigfoot's been all over the world.
Yeah, you know, most of the people who study Bigfoot are pretty much have come to the conclusion that there's different species, because they're not described exactly the same way. I mean, there's the Florida skunk ape, which is different from what people are seeing here in California, which is different from what people are seeing in Australia, which is different from what people are seeing down in South America. But
really? That's really fascinating.
Isn't it bizarre? So what we have, you know, new species are being discovered every year, and large species as well. I mean, there was an antelope discovered not too long ago in my lifetime, which that had never been seen before. Nobody knew about it. A rare antelope. It's a large animal.
Huh.
And, you know, the great apes, 100 years ago, they were not confirmed, their existence, and people were very, very skeptical of, you know, the giant gorilla.
Yeah.
So it is people who say, oh, you know, it's impossible that a creature that large could have gone undetected. Well, my answer is, first of all, it hasn't gone undetected. Bigfoot accounts stretch back hundreds of years, literally hundreds, and in all different cultures. And the evidence now is just building to an unbelievable degree. I think.
So they even give it a category for the science of these hidden creatures called cryptozoology, right?
Right, cryptozoology, which is literally that means hidden animals, the study of hidden creatures or creatures that are unknown to mainstream science. And I'm telling you, Bigfoot is real. The evidence is overwhelming, and it's, I mean, in my mind, there's proof. I think it's conclusive proof. And I think
you have it dated back all the way to 1849.
Oh, yeah, and those are just the first modern accounts. Really, it stretches back a lot farther than that. But the first written history of it stretches, you know, is about 150 years ago, and coming
mm-hmm.
mostly out of the United States. But if you look back in some of the older writings, there's evidence of wild men and hairy men and men in the woods going back a lot farther than that.
Uh-huh.
Man, it's so fascinating. Once I started to really look into this, you know, they don't know who this creature is. There's some theories that it's a Gigantopithecus, which is the largest primate that ever lived, which supposedly went extinct some, you know, million years ago. I forget exactly how long ago. But Gigantopithecus is the most popular theory. But you know what? I wouldn't be at all surprised if what we're looking at is actually like a Neanderthal man, and which is shocking. Neanderthal man is supposed to be extinct, but he's not. And the evidence is overwhelming that there is some type of primate, which is pretty darn intelligent as well, and we can get into that. This does not appear to be a completely stupid animal. But the evidence is overwhelming.
In your book, you have pictures of footprints and things like that, and they all kind of vary in shape and size, but they're all fairly large.
Right. The footprint evidence is probably the most compelling evidence we have, simply because it's so widespread and so hard to fake. You know, you might not think it'd be hard to fake, but the problem is Bigfoot has a step length that is almost twice that of man, of a human being. Meaning
wow.
that when it takes one step and it takes another, its legs are so big, so wide, that it's taking steps wider than a person can take. Now, it's possible a very large person could do it, you know, a Wilt Chamberlain. But there's not enough Wilt Chamberlains in the world to be doing this in every state, you know, in every country.
Uh-huh.
And furthermore, they've done what they call weight tests. You know, they can tell by the depth of the track how much these creatures weigh. And the estimate is about 500 pounds, maybe up to 1,000 in some cases, 750. In any case, these are very, very large creatures. And, okay, now here's an argument, right? That people are wearing wooden footprints and standing on pogo sticks or something to make themselves tall. And the problem with that is, the researchers have discovered what they call dermal ridges. And on these footprints, you can actually see the lines on these creatures' feet. You know how, like, we have fingerprints?
Yes.
These creatures do as well. In fact, they also have handprints. And there are several handprints which seem to indicate that this creature does not have an opposable thumb like we do. So there's butt prints as well. There's full body prints. So we have an awful lot of footprint evidence that is so compelling. I mean, here's an example. There's one case of it's called Old Cripplefoot, and this is in Bossburg in Washington. Very famous case where a set of tracks was found leading like a mile long or a mile and a half, and they followed it. And this line of footprints went right over a fence, a barbed wire fence where a person would have to, you know, climb it. This thing did not have to. It just stepped right over it. So that footprints evidence is really, really compelling. But, you know, Christy, it's not the only evidence we have right now. Recently, there's been some really good evidence in terms of hair samples, fecal samples, and blood samples. And some of these samples have in fact been tested, you know, with genetic testing, and it's remarkable because what they're finding, and this is so exciting, is that the hairs, for example, appear to be half primate and half human. They have human characteristics, but also have primate characteristics. So it's not human, and it's not primate. And the problem is, we don't really have a confirmed Bigfoot hair sample. So what we have is a whole bunch of unidentified hair samples that appear to come from Bigfoot. And they match up coming from, you know, different areas. So whatever hair type it is, it seems to be similar, no matter, you know, if the creature is coming from, you know, the eastern United States.
That's really neat because it sounds like the missing link, you know.
It does.
I wonder if any scientists that study, you know, ancient man has ever been interested in Bigfoot.
Right. There's only a few. You know, it's funny, some of the pioneering researchers were actually anthropologists and zoologists. You know, real big scientists who kind of went out on a limb in supporting Bigfoot and received a lot of ridicule because of it. Right now, I'd say the most expert researcher is Jeff Meldrum, and he teaches at a university. Gosh, where is it? I believe it's in Idaho, but don't quote me on that. But he's a professor of anthropology, and he has received a lot of ridicule from his coworkers, his other professors, his colleagues, who don't believe in Bigfoot and refuse to examine the evidence. Now, that is just so unscientific. I mean, you can say you don't believe in Bigfoot, fine, but you can't say it unless you've looked at the evidence. It's just not fair.
Yeah, it isn't. And,
but he's got...
For all those people that have taken the time and the money to gather up the evidence.
Right, and the evidence... Like, let's talk about photographs for a second. I'm sure you've heard of the Roger Patterson film. I'm going to say it's the most famous film ever taken of a Bigfoot.
Mm-hmm.
And it was taken by a guy who actually went up there looking for Bigfoot because there had been a bunch of encounters in the area. He was a Bigfoot researcher. He wanted to do a documentary on it. And he was filming what they call B-roll, just... footage of the local area where the Bigfoot had been seen. And he wasn't filming at the time when this Bigfoot suddenly appeared. How he first saw it is his horse reared up, started acting strangely. And that's when he saw this Bigfoot across the field, on the edge of the forest. And he whipped out his movie camera and took the most famous footage ever taken of this female Bigfoot. And it just leisurely walks across the field, looks once directly into the camera, and goes into the forest. And they only got a few seconds, really, of footage, about a minute. But it's really the best footage anyone has ever gotten to date, at least that I've seen. There's some really other remarkable footage that I've seen as well, but it's not nearly as popular. But scientists have studied this footage over and over. They estimate this creature is just under 7 feet tall. Has characteristics that differentiate it from humans, a lot of them. And one major one is that when it's walking, its legs do not lock. Humans, when they walk, they have to lock their legs. The knee kind of snaps straight. It's a characteristic of human posture when you're walking. This thing never straightened its legs. None of them do. And it had a lot of other characteristics that are typical of Bigfoot. The pointy head. It's an amazing case, and people have said, oh, it's a man in a gorilla suit, right? And in fact, there's somebody who recently came out and said he was the man who was actually in the suit, and it was all a hoax.
Yeah.
Investigators asked him to prove it, show us the suit, show us anything to back up your story. He had absolutely nothing to back up his story, and most researchers do not believe him. I don't. Absolutely not, because... There were footprints in this case as well, which were studied by major researchers, and these footprints went on for miles, and it's the same story. These footprints are too big. They're like 20 inches. This is way, way bigger than a human footprint. The step length is way too big. It goes way too deep, and it goes over terrain that human beings cannot easily hike through, certainly not at the speed that this thing was going.
That's so neat. I mean, do you know of any stories where there were actual relationships between Bigfoot and humans, like long term?
Yes, it's so fascinating. I'm so glad you asked that because I wanted to get into that. I think a lot of people assume that Bigfoot is just elusive and it doesn't really interact with people, but that's not true. There are accounts where Bigfoot has been very friendly to people, and there has been accounts where Bigfoot has attacked people. Bigfoot can be very dangerous, in fact, but not always. There is one guy who was having a Bigfoot prowl around his house, and so what he did is he started leaving food offerings for it, fish, berries, vegetables, things like this. And the Bigfoot came back and started giving him stuff, too, fish as well. Also gave him killed a deer and put it on his doorstep. I talked to another lady who, Christy, who had a Bigfoot encounter in Acton that went on for years. She had the same thing. This Bigfoot left her a present on her door. It looked like a spine. So these Bigfoot can be very friendly. There was one guy who was in the forest, and a tree fell on him, and he was pinned. He couldn't get out. He says a Bigfoot came up. There were actually two of them, I believe, lifted the tree up and pulled him out from under it. There's another guy who fell off a cliff, broke his leg. He says a Bigfoot lifted him up. It had white hair, smelled really bad, but carried him back to his camp. Another guy said he was bit by a snake. The Bigfoot picked him up, carried him to civilization. There's a number of accounts like this where people have had really extraordinarily friendly encounters with this thing.
Well, I did have an encounter with my girlfriend that you mentioned.
Right.
And her relationship was went on for years. And he not only left a spinal cord, he also left a big rock on her roof. And he was able to shape-shift into a dog. And
there's other accounts
approach
like that.
Her. Yeah, she was terrified, absolutely terrified. She thought it was evil. And so I guess in its attempt to try and develop some kind of a relationship with her, it would shape-shift into a dog, a big old wolf. And
right.
She let it enter her house a couple of times. It walked through and then walked away. And one night she asked me, "Do you want to go see Bigfoot?" And I'm going, "Sure, I'm game." We got in our car. I was driving. And we saw, this was like near dusk when the sun was just gone down in the summertime. And we were driving along the Los Angeles Crest Highway. And we both saw these two deers. And they didn't move. They just looked at us, which is, for most people that are into UFOs, is a sign that there's something going on when there's two deers looking at you and they won't run away. So we turned around and went to where the deers were standing. We got out of the car. We went outside, and she had a name for Bigfoot. She called him Manitoba. And so we went on the edge of the forest from the pullout of the drive, and she called, "Manitoba! Manitoba!" And all of a sudden, we heard something running up the hill, and it just absolutely freaked her out. She grabbed my arm and said, "Run!" So we ran, got back into the car, and drove away really fast. And I said, "I wanted to see Bigfoot." She's like, "No, you just don't know what he's going to do to you. You just have no idea," and blah, you know. But that's my personal experience.
Yeah, you know, she gave a personal experience to me, too. I went up there, and we pulled over where she said this Bigfoot lived. And this was at night, actually, at around 11 o'clock at night. And we heard it roar like 3 times in a row. And she was scared. I was fascinated. I was ready to run down into the valley where it was roaring. But it was, I don't know, I heard this Bigfoot roar. I was high for weeks. You know, I told everyone I knew. I just couldn't believe that I had my own Bigfoot encounter. And you know what's funny? Is she asked me, she says, are there any accounts where people have been kidnapped by Bigfoot, where women have been kidnapped by Bigfoot?" And I told her, "Oh, no, there's no such thing. You don't have to worry about that." And then I went to the books just to make sure and found that there are, in fact, about 10 accounts, probably, you know, closer to 20, but 10 really well-verified ones where people have, in fact, been kidnapped by Bigfoot. So I had to call her up and say, "You know what, Bigfoot does kidnap people. It's very rare. For the most part, you know, they don't harm people for the most part, but there are kidnapping stories." So And she had the feeling this thing was trying to kidnap her. And maybe it was, because it does happen. And, you know, like I said, Christy, there are accounts where Bigfoot is hostile. If uh-huh. you mess around with this thing, first of all, I would say it's most common type of hostile behavior is rock throwing. And there are at least 1,000 accounts of people who are at campsites or at their home, cabin in the wilderness or, you know, hiking or what have you. And rocks get thrown at them from the woods. In some cases, they never see who's exactly throwing the rocks. In other cases, they do. But if you study the stuff, you'll see that Bigfoot does do a lot of rock throwing.
And, well, I'm sure that sometimes he has a good reason to.
Well, apparently this is how it hunts sometimes, and for food. It's also a way that it keeps, you know, people from getting too close. But you know, it does other things. It's charges at people, very, very, very much like gorillas do. In fact, Bigfoot's behavior falls under the umbrella of primate behavior in pretty much every way. It behaves as other primates do. And people have been charged by Bigfoot. There are a number of cases where people have been not only charged at, but pushed down, picked up, and thrown, even kind of crushed a little bit, or banged up and bruised. And so this thing will beat you up if you start bothering it. So if you see a Bigfoot, please don't run up to it and start, you know, hooting at it, because it will respond, and probably aggressively. And you know what's interesting with Bigfoot as well, in terms of primates, is they do vocalizations. Now, normal primates do a lot of hooting, whistling, in fact, and all kinds of really loud vocalizations. They're a very loud animal, primates are, like us. Bigfoot is exactly the same way. There's a lot of cases where it's been seen and heard whistling, like, you know, just whistling along. And here's another weird thing that I've heard many times. When frightened, it will scream like a woman, like a high-pitched woman scream. And that's pretty common. These things are very vocal, and their behavior, again, falls right under the pattern of all other primates.
Well,
which I think argues towards its veracity. Christy, we know more about Bigfoot because there's been so many books written about it. There's probably 100 books, at least, you know, 200, 300 books written on Bigfoot. How many books have there been written on elephants or, you know, tigers or something? Probably not quite as many. So
it's
ironic. It's bizarre. Here we have this creature that mainstream science doesn't believe in, but we know so much about it because it's, quote, unexplained. So many people have studied it that we know what it eats, we know where it lives, we know how it travels, we know what it smells like. We know so much about it. We just don't have a body. But you know what, Christy?
I noticed in your book you have websites of people and organizations that devote their time to Bigfoot. And this book is really worth getting. I mean, just the resources alone are wonderful. Bigfoot Encounters, Bigfoot Field Researchers Organization, BFRO. There's the International Bigfoot Society, IBS, and OregonBigfoot.com, and then there's a Texas Bigfoot Research Conservancy. And I think that's just really wonderful that you listed these connections in your book if somebody wants to research it further. And your book has some wonderful pictures in there. And one of my favorite pictures is the Russian scientist. Sergei Simonov displays the leg of an unknown animal, perhaps a yeti.
Yeah, can you believe they actually do have what appear to be Yeti hands, Yeti legs. There was a couple of cases of Yeti scalps. Those turned out to be like goats in some cases. Sir Edmund Hillary had a big old controversy. He's the guy who climbed Mount Everest. And he was got a lot of publicity because he was supposedly bringing back a Yeti scalp. It turned out not to be one. But yeah, there are people who do have what appear to be, you know, feet of the abominable snowman or things like this. And there are, you know, mentioning that of physical evidence, there are 20, 30 cases where people have allegedly captured Bigfoot. And it's funny because in pretty much every case, if you track it down, it ends up in a dead end. You cannot find out what happened to this body or where it is now. But there are some really compelling cases, like the Russian army came upon a creature that they shot and killed, and this was shipped off to somewhere. There's another really compelling case where two zoologists went to a sideshow, a circus sideshow, and saw this creature frozen in a block of ice. And they're zoologists. They're scientists. They were able to study this firsthand. And they smelled a powerful odor. They saw this was obviously a biological creature, but they lost track of it. A number of cases very much like this. Most of them dated, you know, not recently, at least 20 years ago. But my guess is that sooner or later we are going to see a Bigfoot body or an abominable snowman or what have you. And
well, they must be unbelievably clever to keep themselves hidden from everybody, and they must have families, you know, Bigfoot families.
Right. Well, you know, the fossil evidence is so incomplete. We don't have, you know, complete skeletons of a lot of animals, even ones that are currently living today, some really rare animals. We don't have samples of them. It's very, very hard to track wild animals. And a lot of, you know, like the snow leopard and things like this, we know more about these animals because from their tracks, from their scat, you know, their droppings and things like this. But in terms of actually studying, getting a body, it's not always easy. And with Bigfoot, well, there's many theories as to why no one's been able to get a body. One theory is that they're intelligent, and when they die, they go off to a place which is very remote. And, but you know, in the wilderness, bodies disintegrate very, very quickly. They're eaten up by predators, bones and everything. So it's very, very rare to have any type of body last for any period of time. And another theory is that Bigfoot is, how am I going to say this, paranormal, or at least partly paranormal, and can shapeshift, can turn invisible, is intelligent as a human being, and that we will never, ever, ever get a body because they go into another dimension when they die. That is speculation as far as I'm concerned. I personally think that we will get a body sooner or later, but that's one possible reason why we haven't yet. You know, that is, I think, the biggest argument against the existence of Bigfoot is the fact that we don't have a body. But I'm going to say again, well, look at all these large animals we're still discovering. Every year we discover new species. So it is entirely possible that these things are out there, and just because we don't have a body means nothing. In fact, most of the accounts of Bigfoot come from the same type of terrain, what they would call mountain forests, highly elevated areas in the wilderness that are wooded. They're almost always cluster around water sources. For example, in Texas, most of the sightings, I would say 75% of the sightings in Texas come from East Texas. And that's where all the water is in that state. You know, West Texas doesn't have nearly as much water. So the Bigfoot are being seen where the water is, which is exactly what you would expect if this was a real
So they're
feature.
Not carnivorous, then. They probably need water.
Well, they're omnivorous is what they are. They're opportunistic hunters. They will eat anything, basically. But that depends on what terrain they're in. Here in California, it appears that they eat a lot of clams, because people have come upon their scat along the coast there on Northern California, and there are parasites in there that show that these things are eating clams. A lot of people have seen pine needles and stuff in their scat, but it depends where you go. They eat berries, roots, fruit, fish. They have been seen hunting large animals, including deer. People have seen them carrying deer away. They'll eat dogs. They have even been seen attacking horses and things like this. There's a number of really interesting cases where people have had their picnics raided by Bigfoot. One case that comes to mind was this, not of a picnic, but this family kept having this Bigfoot prowling around their cabin at night. And they decided to leave it vegetables on the picnic table outside. And each morning when they get up, the vegetables would be gone. So this became kind of a routine. They were pretty darn sure it was Bigfoot because there would be footprints all around. They saw it a couple of times. The dogs would bark. They could smell it. And they decided to stop doing it for whatever reason. They just forgot to leave food out. This Bigfoot came and it was angry. It wanted its food. And it started throwing trash cans and banging on the house, and they ended up having to shoot at this creature to scare it away. So please don't feed the Bigfoot.
Sounds almost like they behave similar to like a bear.
They're very similar, very, very similar, except I think these things are intelligent, at least more intelligent than a bear. We don't have a lot of proof of that. Certainly, they don't have any signs of civilization that we know of, but there are a couple of cases where people have seen things that seem to indicate that these beings are intelligent. For example, one guy, he says he was kidnapped by a Bigfoot and taken to its, not a cave, but it was kind of an overhang where this whole family of Bigfoot was living. And
uh-huh.
He said that they were able to knit or kind of weave rough blankets together out of reeds and stuff like this, and that they had a very, very basic language which they spoke. He didn't understand it, but there appeared to be words that they were saying. And there's other scattered reports just like that. So these things do appear to be at least a little bit intelligent. The Indians, the Native Americans, they have a long, long oral history of these guys, these beings. And they say, yes, these are intelligent creatures. They are half man, half animal. They are to be left alone because they can be dangerous if bothered. You know, if you, bother them. But they say that, yes, they are intelligent. And I
read in your book, The Unbelievable Cases, Chapter 7. And the one case that I really loved was about Albert Ostman. And he was vacationing in Toba Inlet. Was that
right.
The man you were referring to?
Exactly, yeah. He was kidnapped and held for, I believe it was like a couple of days at least.
He said that they were shouting strange words which said, suka, suka.
Yeah, suka, suka. Interesting, huh? I don't know what that means. Maybe it means human. But, you know, gosh, these things are real. They're absolutely real. And you know what's even more fascinating to me is they're seen in places where you would never expect to see them. Like here in L.A. L.A. is a huge city, millions of people. But right outside of L.A., right out to the north, is the sprawling wilderness of the Los Angeles National Forest. And it's just acres and acres and acres of wilderness. Turns out this is a huge UFO, Bigfoot hotspot. The area around Quartz Hills, Acton, Lancaster, Antelope Valley. People have seen Bigfoot walking right through the city of Lancaster, right down the street. These things can travel It is fascinating. These things can travel an estimated 35 miles an hour, up to 50 even, which sounds really fast, but you have to remember, one Bigfoot leg is about 6 foot tall, weighs about as much as a man. So you have these it has very, very powerful legs, and they have been known to travel, you know, up to 150 miles in a day.
A huge stride, it sounds like, to get that much distance, you know?
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, this is not unusual for wild animals to travel very large distances in one day. And this is, I think, one of their secrets for remaining evasive for this long, remaining unknown, is they're able to do things that we can't do. They can very, very quickly run into the forest at night, and they're mostly nocturnal, but they are also seen during the day, and they can disappear very quickly. And you know, I have to mention this, Christy, about the smell. There's a lot of reports of Bigfoot stinking to high heaven, smelling. People describe it as smelling like sulfur, like skunk, like dirty socks, like death, like rotten food. You get all kinds of descriptions, but basically it boils down to foul, really just a foul, swampy odor. But now this is the weird part. Only about 20% of the cases involve smelly Bigfoot. A lot of cases of Bigfoot, they don't smell bad, or at least the person doesn't notice it. So how do you explain that? Here's what the experts say. There's two main theories. One is that these things are scavengers, and sometimes they feed on dead animals, and like other animals, they may rub around in it to disguise their scent or what have you, like dogs do. They smell bad because they're feeding on this stuff. Another theory, and I think this is probably equally valid, honestly, is that it is a defense mechanism like a skunk, that they can actually excrete an odor at will in order to scare away predators. And there's some evidence of this, the Florida skunk ape and others. So it's hard to say. We don't have proof of this. If we had a body, we would certainly be able to tell. And it's I don't know, it's hard to say. Primates, in general, do smell really bad. I mean, if you go to the zoo and you go to the monkey cages and the gorilla cages, you can smell it a mile away. They stink. We stink. You know, as humans, we stink really bad. So, they stink. And it's not easy to explain exactly why. But, yeah, they smell bad.
It could be rutting.
That's true, huh? You know, maybe that's they only stink during a certain time of a year, or when they're fertile, or what have you.
Yeah,
it's weird. But we know a lot about them. You know how they travel. They seem to travel through creek beds. They're often seen traveling on mountain ridges, on the tops of ridges, and through forests. They generally shy away from civilization, as a rule. But not always. And there are certain places that are just major hotspots. It's really bizarre.
So the major hotspots are usually near water?
Yes and no, because these things are seen in the desert as well. It's hard to explain. The Anza Borrego Desert down in Southern California has a number of encounters. The Mojave has a number of encounters. The thing is, these things can travel great distances, and there are water sources in the desert as well. But generally, yes, you have more sightings around water sources than in areas where there is less water.
So let's create a scenario, okay? If you're out camping or hiking or anything like that, and you encounter a Bigfoot, what should you expect?
Well, for most people, a Bigfoot encounter involves just a glimpse of this thing, and it runs away. They're very elusive. But that's a really good question, because it's hard to say what you can expect. If you're very close to this creature, and it does not have an escape route, you can bet that it might act in a hostile way. If you threaten it, if you're following it, things like this, it could become hostile. But for the most part, these things are afraid of humans or avoid humans, and it's very, very rare for anyone to actually have touched, say, a Bigfoot physically. For the most part, you don't have to be afraid of them. They're not going to hurt you. They're very, very elusive and will run away, just like most wild animals. So, but you know what? We're still waiting for the proof for a really good film footage. I saw some film footage on hard copy or A Current Affair, one of those tabloid TV shows back in the 80s. And I tell you, this was some awfully compelling footage. It showed a guy up in Washington who was going up a creek. He was just walking up a creek. It was a very, very rural area, very remote, nothing, no sign of civilization at all, when he sees what looks like a man ahead of him, 20, 50 feet ahead. And he's slowly getting closer and closer. And when he kind of clears, comes around the corner and all the trees are out of the way, he's about 20 feet away, maybe 30. And you can see it's not a man. It's a Bigfoot. It's in the water and it's splashing around. It's very hairy. It's got dark, dark brown hair, almost black. And it turns.
I remember that footage.
Oh, it was amazing. I've never seen it since. And it bothers me so much because, you know, a lot of researchers haven't even heard of it. And I think a lot of people are sitting on footage like this but don't realize that there are organizations out there who specialize in this. And this footage was compelling, compelling. It was amazing. It showed this creature jump up, stand up straight like a man, and take big loping strides out into the forest. In three steps, it was gone. So it was some of the best footage I've ever seen, really.
Yeah, I remember that footage. It was very fascinating. I think that that there are people out there that are sitting on footage. I mean, that's the case with anything. And they don't really know what to do with it, or they're just hanging on to it or whatever, you know. I just can't imagine something living on this earth for so long and not being able to have some kind of evidence or relationship with this particular being.
Right. Well, there are a number of people who say they have relationships and see Bigfoot regularly. And I put stories like that in my book. You know, there are certain areas where these creatures hang out and you can go and see them. If you're a serious researcher, I can give you directions and you can go see your own Bigfoot. I have no doubt that, you know, it's pretty darn easy to do. And I'm surprised that these nature shows, you know, there's some really amazing nature photography going on these days that they haven't caught on yet, because that's how we're going to get our proof, is when somebody throws some real money at this, and we're going to get our proof. But there are a lot of
all the areas that you've researched, which one's the biggest hot spot of all?
By far, Northern California, by far. And this is what all the other researchers are saying. And you know what's really interesting is I think I know why. It's because this is the last holdout. You know, Bigfoot is the tallest primate. Interestingly, this is where the tallest trees in the world are. Everything there is huge. All the plants, the ferns are giant, the trees are giant, and the animals are giant. And it makes total sense. And there's, you know, experts are not, they kind of disagree on exactly how many, but most people feel that there's at least a population of 3,000 living in the Happy Camp area, you know, that whole area. Gosh, what's it called? Just the north, where the sequoia forests, the redwood forests are.
Sequoia National Forest. There's Yosemite.
Right. This is where most of the Bigfoot are hanging out, and the Trinity River. People have seen them up and down there, and it's amazing. You know, there was a group of miners who were attacked. This is a group of like 12 men whose cabin was attacked by these creatures. Rocks were thrown at it. The creatures just banged up the whole cabin, tearing pieces of wood off and banging on the roof. A lot of people saw it at once. So when people say, oh, I saw Bigfoot, for the most part, most of the people who see Bigfoot are with someone else. So it's not like we're just depending on one person's story. These are multiple
witnesses.
Right,
witness you have multiple witnesses.
And just amazing, you know. I'm just so excited about this discovery, and we're going to be seeing more about Bigfoot in the future if it's real, and I'm certain it is.
Uh-huh.
We're gonna get the proof out there. You know, it's illegal actually.
Well, I'd like to say to everybody, if they're interested, to buy this book. And it's written by Preston Dennett. It's called Bigfoot, Yeti, and Other Ape Men. And it's through Chelsea House Publishing. And he writes in the book about Bigfoot and some encounters and some resources. And he also has a timeline about Bigfoot. And I've done some illustration for the book. My name is Kisara, and you can find some of my artwork in kisaraart.com. But back to Preston. We have a minute. Would you like to make some finishing remarks about Bigfoot?
Oh, gosh. We are almost out of time, aren't we?
Yeah.
God, there's so much to say. It's, you know, I would tell people, if you don't believe in Bigfoot, first of all, you have not done your research. And I don't mean to be rude, but there is so much information out there about this stuff. It's coming from every corner of the globe. These creatures are real. And what I find most fascinating is the wide variety of reports. And we have ones coming from Mexico, involving short, little, hairy creatures, you know, 4 feet tall. So they're not all really, really big and tall. Some of these things are small. And some people... Now, this is another weird thing. The first guy I ever interviewed about Bigfoot, he told me in an embarrassed tone, he's like, you know what, I think it was reading my mind, or I was reading its mind. I felt like there was some weird telepathic link. I'm kind of poo-pooed it. I'm like, okay, well, whatever. I recorded it. Turns out that comes up in case after case after case, as people communicate telepathically with these things. So there's that whole aspect which has not even been looked into really, or explained. These things are telepathic apparently, or some of them. It's my guess that there's a number of different species involved, and Bigfoot, Sasquatch is one of them. The skunk ape is one of them. The skunk ape looks different from the Northern California Bigfoot. The skunk ape is much shorter. It has longer hair. It's usually red. So, I don't know. There's
different varieties of Bigfoot, then, is what you're saying.
Yeah, there is. And they're living right alongside with us, have been for years and years and years. It's entirely possible that they have gone undetected, because they have. I mean, you can argue it any way you want, but the facts are facts. They're here, and we still don't have conclusive proof. But the fact is, we don't cover most of the globe, humans. We all live in these tiny little areas called cities. And even in the country, we're still very clustered together. Most of the Earth is wilderness. It really, really is. Most of it is not civilized. It's just huge, huge wilderness areas that most people never, ever go to. And this is where these things are hanging out. And that's what I would tell people, is that they're real. Just, you know, if you hear someone say they saw Bigfoot, for God's sake, lend them an ear. You know, give them a chance to tell their story. Don't just disbelieve it. I think skepticism is one of the biggest obstacles to enlightenment, to the advancement of science. Mainstream science is throwing these accounts out. They won't even look at it. It's shocking, because the evidence, like I say, is enough to convict anyone in a court of law. Really, it's just amazing. And I heard my own Bigfoot. I know it's real. I mean, you can say whatever you want, but I already know. And I think the evidence is amazing.
Well, there you go. You got the final word. Keep your mind open. Keep your eyes open. And hang on to those cameras, folks. They're the ones that'll bring in the evidence. Get your little beakers out. Put the hair in there. The little scat. Get your, plaster casts. And go out there and find those Bigfoots. So,
yes, please. Yeah.
Gather the evidence and make it believable, at least for yourselves. And if somebody says they've seen them, well, write it down and send an article to Preston, PrestonDennett.com. And who knows?
You can contact me through my website, which is my name, PrestonDennett.com. So, I'd love to hear from anyone out there who has seen Bigfoot. And if you have any questions, I can certainly answer your questions about Bigfoot, and I would love to talk to you.
Thank you so much for telling us about your book and about Bigfoot, and thank you for listening to us all, and keep in touch, and always believe in UFOs and the paranormal, because it's out there. Never close your eyes. Good night, and have a wonderful evening.
Good night.